Right now, I think it's safe to say that we're not a sustainable society, nor are we well adapted to the climates and environments we live in here in Australia. So with the climate changing in front of our eyes, it's never been more important to take a clear-eyed look at the risks and opportunities ahead of us and take the steps to become a sustainable and well-adapted society. Hello and welcome to this discussion on risk, in particular the risks and opportunities that go with the transition to a sustainable and well-adapted society. My name is Lynette Smith and I'm a member of IPA Victoria's Sustainability Community of Practice. I'm coming to you today from Wurundjeri country. I'm a writer and advisor on communication strategy, particularly strategies for driving social change, even more specifically adaptation, the biggest social change of all. Jonathan Mason is joining us from Bunurong country. He leads the client capability team at VMIA, the Victorian Managed Insurance Authority. VMIA is the Victorian government's insurance and risk advisor, looking after about 4,000 state government organisations and also a range of community service organisations. Just turning to our topic now, I think we should start with a definition. The international standard defines risk as the effect of uncertainty on objectives. Jono, what's your experience of talking with clients in these terms, uncertainty and objectives?
It's a light bulb moment when we talk to people about it. It's also a frustrating moment for people when we talk to them about what risk really means. And many of you listening in, your organisations have to consider risk. So you'll be governed by rules that say you've got to do it. You haven't got a choice. And we don't want to spend too much time talking about compliance today, but it's important. And I think it's helpful to know there's an anchor within the definition of risk, which is it's all built around the idea of objectives. As Lynn said, it's the effect of uncertainty on objectives. So it's not what we all think, as in the common daily usage of the word risk is bad stuff, right? Things that go wrong or future threats or things that are bad now, like things that are affecting us now. If you were to pull over, talk to one of the leaders in our country, like the Prime Minister, Mr. Albanese, and say to him, you know, what are the risks facing Australia? You know, he's probably not going to say, what are the federal government's objectives and what is the effect of future uncertainty on that? But that's what the definition actually says. He's going to come up with, you know, cyber attacks on Australia or major disasters, bads, threats, wrongs, things that we don't want to see happen. But that's not what the definition of risk technically is. It's actually the effect of uncertainty on objectives. And in the context of adaptation and climate change, it really makes us reflect on the importance of well-articulated goals and objectives in the first place. Because if you don't have that, then how on earth can you articulate good risks? So the positivity in the word risk is the thing that we struggle to, land with organisations, the idea that it's a positive conversation, because the definition says the effect of uncertainty on objectives. It's yin and yang, it's positive, it's negative. And nearly always when we go to think about risk and when our organisations think about that, they're thinking about the barriers, the obstacles, the things that get in the way. They're not thinking about what are the opportunities to do things better? How can we double down on our strengths?
The other thing that strikes me as well in listening to you talk about that, Jono, is that you can't really talk about risks or opportunities unless you're anchored in that question of what counts as that objective that you're aiming for. I wonder if it's worth us just sort of trying to put that concept of the objective within that picture of sustainability. You know, I know that this can get into a bit of a tangle, actually. People have talked about alignment and you end up in some horrible exercise there. But I think one of the most productive ways to look at this is to say that what we as in the government or the public sector supporting policy objectives, we need to define objectives that, if achieved, they will make us a sustainable society and economy here in Victoria. So what we're doing is we're choosing objectives because they achieve that outcome. And I'm saying it that way because I think there's a tendency to just come up with the objectives, not really think about what's at stake, what is standing between here, where we are now, and that future state of affairs where our objectives are realised. And you end up in this sort of administrative exercise of retrofitting them to fit our ideas of the sustainability agenda. So I just wanted to ground that a bit because it's part of this being often a bit of an opaque space.
Sustainable to me, I mean, if I relate it back to something very hard and vast, which is the state's insurance scheme. So, you know, we have a strategy 2024, you know, like most organisations have a strategic sort of plan and a period of years that they measure the success by. And one of our key pillars is the idea that, you know, our clients, government organisations are covered, obviously, we're an insurer, but buried within that is it's a sustainable proposition that insurance as a solution to a problem is going to continue on. It's not going to end. And then we bring into the conversation and climate change, and you say, well, you overlay that on your objective. So having a sustainable a source of insurance cover for future things that might go wrong. And you can, it connects. Like I go back to the first principle, which is the effect of uncertainty on objectives. You've got the anchor is the goal. So, and if the goal is about something that's sustainable, then thinking about the sort of risks and threats and opportunities that exist out there is actually relatively easy.
I think it's a really undervalued aspect of you know, what we might call risk thinking, actually, that work that you can do collectively often, because it's better to have a lot of minds around the table doing this work. It's good cognitive, imaginative sort of work to do, and it can be fun, really. One of the things I think is really important is that, you know, if you're going to define some objectives for yourself, for your organization, for your program, for your policy, you know, they've got to be specific and unique to you. Like if this looks like an objective that anyone could have, you know, using too many words like innovation or collaboration and so on, then that's a problem. It really has to be an objective that no one else could have, I think.
What was it you said to me a few weeks ago about the a good objective, a good goal, in fact, or a good priority or whatever, is one that no one else could have written.
Yeah, we were talking about ChatGPT, actually. The point that we were talking about then was that it's kind of generic. So maybe it'll be good if you typed in how do you assess risks or something like that. One of these sort of, you know, a standard process or a governance-y sort of question. But the question of what are the objectives that matter to us here in Victoria that we want to make sure that we achieve by, say, 2030, 2050 or something like that, then you can't do that with the machine. You have to do it with brains around the table. The other thing too, which is makes it different, is that we're talking about forward-looking things, whereas the machine is just a backwards-looking thing. It's free sorting stuff. So when you're talking about this sort of future-oriented changing the course of history sort of things, which was what we're trying to do with this risk stuff, you know, we could keep going on the way we're going and that's not sustainable. So it actually requires a genuine intervention in the course of things for us to become sustainable. And this is, yeah, it can't be this generic thing. It's something that comes from people sitting around the table and talking about what matters in precise, definite terms, which are relevant to here and now.
Yeah, most of our listeners have probably heard of the acronym SMART. I must have heard it 20 years ago, you know, and it still makes sense because it's so specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-based. So that acronym, which is a really good little tool to have in your pocket if you're involved in crafting goals and plans. One thing we've found at VMIA, where I work, when we talk to our clients about this ritual of going and this mindset of going and thinking about future uncertainty, and the idea that you need to come up, there's this goal, we have to come up with a goal within risk management, that is a goal, we have to come up with a certain number of really watertight scenarios that everyone around the table looks at and says, yep, they're the scenarios in the future that worry us the most, they're uncertain, they're future-based, aren't we all happy? You know, the ritual of the risk register, some people call it. But we find in that process of talking to clients about crafting risks and thinking about the future and then trying to articulate it. And when we say, okay, what's the first point? We need to sit down and say, what are your goals? This is the theme of sort of this podcast in some ways. It's all about articulating goals. The group will stop and down tools and go, you know what? We're not ready, because we sat down and looked at our corporate plan or a strategic plan. And this is particularly the case if the corporate plan is still in a draft and it's still up in the air. And it's like, we actually can't sit down and with confidence articulate what we mean by the future scenarios that concern us, because our plan is woolly. It's poorly sort of articulated. It's half baked. It's not quite there yet, because how on earth can you carry on with this? You can sort of do a half-hearted job, and you might get a lot of those future scenarios right, but how can you do that well if you don't have objectives that are well articulated in the first place? So we've seen it happen often that our clients will go back to the drawing board, either to further critique and further shine and polish the language they've used, or if not that, they might go back to at least collectively agree on the language that they meant. What did we mean when we said that, when we wrote that in our plan? What do we mean by that again? And reset before they can then go and speak about the risk bit, the future facing part. And what I think is interesting about that is that I don't think it says in the risk management standard anywhere that the value of the process is it makes you go back and critique your plan. What actually says in the standard is that considering risk, this sort of ritual framework, this way of thinking, is about creating and protecting value. It doesn't say what value that is. This is in the international standard. But I've seen in the behavior over the years that one of the values that it provides is it's the giant mirror. So it puts the big mirror up in front of an organization for it to go, what is our function again? What's our purpose? Why are we here? And how have we articulated that to our stakeholders, our staff, our volunteers, the community at large? Ooh, we haven't articulated it very well. if you put that up against adaptation to climate change, it doesn't stack up that well. We really need to go back and reframe it. And I think that's a really important value of risk management, is the ability to give people time for pause and to reevaluate, you know, why they were there in the first place.
Yeah, I do think that's a good point. I think there's a bit of a hazard of just taking the objectives for granted. And, you know, I hope we, in our second podcast, we can sort of speak a bit more about the practical, we want to talk a bit more about how we can make it practical. And I think that's one of the ways that we can recommend to people that, becoming a real skilled facilitator of these sort of discussions, I think is really terrific, because we need to really critically evaluate what it is that we are in mobilizing all our resources and effort to achieve.
In the environment we're in now, climate change is an issue and it's a risk, right? It's the present and it's the future. It's the reality we're in. Is that every organization, those of you listening in, your plans and your goals and objectives have to consider climate change, and should probably do it in a transparent way, in a way that's meaningful for your stakeholders, and not just as some environmental scan thing that you do when you create the plan. It's like, no, you actually need to craft your goals and objectives with what you suggested earlier on, Lynn, about us having a sustainable community. And that needs to be enshrined in, you know, every single organization's goals and objectives, irrespective of whether you're a land manager where and water manager, where it's very obvious the impacts of climate change right now, or you're maybe a policy part of government where it's not quite so obvious. In fact, the Climate Change Act, you could argue, it says that you have to consider climate change in decision making. It doesn't specify what decisions. To me, that means that every government entity in Victoria has to have transparently considered climate change and go beyond doing it as just a scanning exercise and actually craft the goals and objectives, taking into account what we need to do as a state, as a community, as organisations to both adapt to climate change, to look at net zero, to look at the impact of climate change on us and what sort of future we want.
Yeah. You know, there's quite a lot of thought out there about the physical risks associated with a changing climate. A lot of talk about the transition risks that go with us becoming more adapted, better adapted, just well adapted to the future state of affairs we're heading to. So we've got to think about what that future is like, but and how we want it to be. And we've also got to think about the risks of transition and the risks of change. There are, you know, I know we've talked in the past about imagination, Jono, which is something that people tend to be a bit sniffy about. But the thing about imagination is it's how you think in concrete, specific, definite ways about that future state of affairs. So, yes, we've got the scenarios that have been developed by scientists and they're very good. But the question I think that we have to address in a quite particular way, this is looping back to the question of particularity, is so what will 1.5 degrees of warming mean for the three different climate zones in Victoria? What will it mean for this catchment? What will it mean up in Mildura compared to down in Marlow or something like that? And I think that there's work of imagination, thought, deliberation that has to happen in thinking about what the consequences are in the actual places and circumstances in which people live and work. That's one way in which the imagination can come into play. And then there's also the imaginative work, the deliberative work, the work we do together to create the change. It's potentially a creative thing. So it'd be good, actually, if we just close on this question of the role of imagination. I mean, I know you've had some experience with clients trying to, you know, elicit that skill and activity and flow of thought.
I think I had an experience about a year ago, and I think part of the answer to the question around why it was difficult was because people really weren't being directed to think about risk in the future. But just bear that in mind. So we were thinking forward with a group of people, educated, learned people, think forward 5 years. So thinking into the mid-2020s. And I brought in different techniques. I was facilitating some conversations, and I showed an example of Australia at that time where some jobs have been replaced by AI, and I talked about the opening of Nancy Bird Waldron Airport in Sydney, so you know that because it's due to open in 2026, I think, and I brought in some elements to get people to try and imagine what 2025, 2026 looked like. I could not, despite, I say this quite engaged group, I couldn't get them to think beyond COVID. Couldn't get the group to break out of, okay, COVID, we've gone back where we are now, right? Which is only a year, 18 months after the fact. At this point we are now, I couldn't get them to imagine it. It's not a failure in the sense that I get depressed about it. It's a failure in the sense that I think intrinsically it's really, really hard for people to think about something that's much beyond their view, their natural horizon, which is pretty short. So it's definitely a place for innovation and creativity when we think about risk management and thinking about risks and climate change and the effects of physical and transition risk on organisations. And just the other thing I would say is that we look at other domains. So you look at where can you find tools and techniques that can help you with your work? And traditionally, it would be through engineers and through accountants and actuaries, and looking at cause and effect easily correlated, and looking at, well, we can see if we turn a knob over here, we get a result over there. Well, maybe we need to look in other domains, like in the arts and creativity, to actually help us understand connections. That's a little bit of a deep topic to maybe finish on, but it's to say that thinking about risk is hard. It should be grounded in objectives, and we shouldn't be afraid to use techniques that open up the possibilities of innovation so that we can imagine the future.
In the second part of this discussion, we'll look at how you can come up with those well-articulated objectives that Jono was talking about. In other words, objectives that, if achieved, will get us closer to being a sustainable, well-adapted society. We'll also discuss some techniques for reducing uncertainty, because if you're going to manage the effect of uncertainty on your objectives, that's a good place to start. If you'd like to explore more about what we've talked about today, then Jono and I, together with a wider team at VMIA, developed a set of guides on assessing and managing risks. Jono went even further and put together guides on risks associated with climate change. They're all publicly available. You don't have to be from Victoria, and I highly recommend them. You can find links to these and other useful references in the show notes. This podcast has been developed by the Sustainability Community of Practice at IPA Victoria, which is Victoria's peak public sector professional organisation. IPA aims to connect, empower and celebrate Victoria's public purpose sector. If you'd like to know more about this work, then search for sustainability on the IPA Victoria's website, which is vic.ipaa.org.au. You can also stay in touch with what we do by following us on LinkedIn at IPAA Victoria or on Twitter at IPAA VIC. This program is produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong people of the Kulin Nation. I'm Lynette Smith, and thank you for listening.